Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me once again is Benjamin Solak. Ben, day two of the guest mock draft 2019 series. We got Kyler Murray off the board. We got Nick Bosa off the board. How you feeling right now? Did you think that's how it was going to be?
I mean, I get like it made sense. Like, I think you have to go Kyler at one and then Bosa at two is what makes sense. But I told you this yesterday. I say it again today. This is where I get excited, because this is why I think that the Jets at number three are the first big inflection point in the draft, because I think they could go a lot of different ways.
No, I agree.
So I'm really excited to see what day two brings. Day two is where we get funky, man. I'm excited.
Yes, and like we have for each other, the rest of the picks and what we're doing today, we have a special guest here to pick for the New York Jets and to tell us more about the Jets situation than anybody else can, Mr. Joe Caparoso. Joe, thank you so much for joining us and joining this mock draft, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so Jets, year one, Sam Darnold, obviously, you know, certainly a rookie year. You got to keep that into perspective, but they are picking number three in the draft. So they did garner the record that has them picking all the way up at number three. What was it like for the Jets in year one? What is the overall consensus of how Darnold did, how their rebuild is going on, and kind of what it was like last year in 2018?
Well, I think the best thing about Sam Darnold's rookie season is that he finished very strong. He had three of his best games, if not his three best games, to basically close the season outside of week 17. He threw for over 350 yards against the Packers in an overtime loss. He had a great game in primetime against a playoff-bound Houston Texans team and also led the Jets to a win on the road over Buffalo, where he had left with an injury in the first half and came back and led them to a game-winning drive late in the fourth quarter. And Darnold did this really with nothing around him. If you look at what the Jets' supporting cast was on offense in those final four or five starts he made when he returned from injury, their starting running back was Elijah McGuire, who was their third stringer when the season started. He had Robbie Anderson at receiver, who closed the season very strong. But outside of that, he had Jermaine Kearse, Deontay Burnett, who was an undrafted free agent they signed at the beginning of the year. They had a weak offensive line. They were without their starting right tackle. It was a pretty suspect supporting cast, and he also had a below average, to put it politely, offensive coordinator in Jeremy Bates. And he still found a way to improvise and make plays. And his numbers ended out netting out okay. I think if you look at the box score, you'd say, eh, he had an okay rookie year. He did end up finishing with more touchdowns than interceptions. But really, if you dig in and watch him play, there was a ton of encouraging stuff there for a 21-year-old who started from week one and was on a bad team with a bad coaching staff. And candidly, you know, he's still in a situation where myself and many others are not thrilled with the Jets GM. He's heading into year five. He's 0-4 on making the playoffs. And this is still a team, even after a pretty active free agency, that I don't know if they're really – ready to be a playoff team yet in year five. They hired Adam Gase, not a popular hire at the time. I think, you know, fans eventually come around on the decisions their team make. I think if nothing else, Gase is an offensive-minded guy, and there's hope that he will help further Sam Darnold's development. But I think right now the feeling around the team is that they have their quarterback. Everyone's excited about Le'Veon Bell helping out that quarterback, and there's a lot of other question marks around the roster.
Right, and you brought up some of the struggles maybe in personnel, the struggles in coordinator that Darnold had to swallow over his first year. Pretty active offseason so far for the Jets. Obviously, you have the head coaching change. It's Adam Gase and now Dole Loggins, who are going to be your offensive minds there. You mentioned Le'Veon Bell. Robbie Anderson is tendered at the RFA, and Jamison Crowder and Josh Bellamy come in. And Kalike Osemele as well, you almost forget, traded, acquired from Oakland. So let me ask you this. What do you think were the biggest impact free agent signings for the Jets, and how does that impact their draft perspective moving forward?
Well, I think offensively they did a good job this offseason. I was a big proponent of signing Le'Veon Bell, considering their cap situation and how starved for offensive talent they have been. I think if there's ever a situation you're going to pay for a running back, it's when you have your quarterback on his rookie deal, and it's when you have over $100 million in cap space. And yeah, it's when you've been consistently terrible and terrible on offense for nearly a decade. So very happy they landed Bell. I thought Crowder was a very smart signing. I think he was one of the top free agent receivers available, if not arguably the top free agent receiver available for what the Jets need him to do in Adam Gase's offense. I think I like the trade for Osemele a lot. They needed to get ahead of a weak offensive line market, and they basically gave up nothing for him, and they badly needed help at guard. Defensively, look, C.J. Mosley is a great player. They paid him a ton of money, $87 million for a non-pass-rushing linebacker. I don't doubt that he will be the heart and soul of that defense and is arguably the best inside linebacker in the NFL. I think the only problem with the Jets offseason so far is that you could blame it on what happened with Anthony Barr. You could blame it on whatever you want. They had a single edge rusher, and this team has had no edge rusher or no edge rushing presence for over a decade at this point. They did not add a center. They still have a big gaping hole at that position, and they didn't really add any outside cornerbacks. They did sign Brian Poole to replace Buster Screen in the slot, but cornerback, edge rusher, center, and really offensive line overall are still problem spots, despite some pretty savvy additions. I don't doubt that Bell, Crowder, and Osemele are going to be quality starters for this team and help Sam Darnold a lot, but there's definitely still work to be done around this roster.
Now I know you talked about there the coaching staff being new with Adam Gase coming in, but then also the GM's been there for quite a while, so it's an interesting mix because you might have a feel for what one of the guys is doing, calling the shots in the war room, as opposed to it being a new guy on the other side with the coaching staff. Do you have any kind of inclinations or leaning where the Jets might be going? Maybe not just over at number three overall, although that is important. Kind of positions that maybe through free agency or who they brought back or who they didn't, that they are targeting kind of throughout the draft, where you could see them picking up some specific positions throughout draft weekend?
Well, the Jets have been pretty public about a few things. That they want to trade back. They want to find a way to get out of that spot so they have more dart throws potentially, which is something they certainly need with only six total picks. And they've had a lot of mid-round problems drafting. They've also been pretty blunt that they're trying to move on. But not as blunt as you can be through NFL media, that they're going to try to move on from Darren Lee, who was a first-round pick from them for them only 3 years ago. Sure what they're going to get back from him. Maybe a day three pick at best. I think if you look at McCagnon's history, they have drafted a lot of old prospects and a lot of interior defensive linemen, particularly after day one, which has been a frustrating thing to watch develop. Now, people who defend him will say that Todd Bowles had an influence on a lot of those picks. How much of that is actually true? I don't know. Now, Adam Gase was in a spot in Miami where he had a lot of personnel control. Technically, the way it's been outlined here, McCagnon is still supposed to have the personnel control, but I am sure that a different coaching staff is going to influence how they think in some ways. You would think or you would hope that they are going to skew a little more heavily to the offense and trying to support Darnold as much as possible. This is a team that has only drafted two offensive linemen over the past 4 years, and both have been later than the fourth round. So they've ignored that position, basically, draft weekend. The hope is that that's going to change now because they need some development players on that side of the ball. Even though they have a very good young tight end in place in Chris Herndon, adding more depth there and adding more depth at receiver because Robbie Anderson, like you said, he just got the tender. He could potentially walk next year. You know, Crowder did miss 9 games last year with an injury. I think you want to have more depth there because Bellamy is really more of a special teamer. They need a solid backup to Le'Veon Bell. I would not say Elijah McGuire is really best suited to be one, you know, Bell injury or him being slow to reacclimating to the game. He's not the best guy to be ready to be given 15, 20 carries a game. He's a nice role player, catches the ball out of the backfield, but really struggled running the football over the past couple of years. So my hope is that we see a draft that skews more offense. You look at what the Jets did last year. They took Darnold at 3. They took Herndon in the 4th round. Both very good picks that you should be excited about. But beyond that, you basically drafted 2 interior defensive linemen who made no contributions last year, and I have a tough time ever seeing them make a contribution. They also drafted a nickel corner in Parry Nickerson, who I don't really think is going to have a role going forward, especially after signing Poole. And then they took a special teamer D2 running back in Trenton Cannon, who I doubt is going to make an impact either. So they didn't really do a good job adding a lot more offensive pieces around Darnold last year outside of Herndon. So the hope is that they try to right that wrong this year.
So do you see them potentially attacking offense then, even with that number 3 overall pick? You do find that they could fit in a starter at offensive tackle or maybe even at wide receiver. Do you think, what positions do you think are in play for 3 overall? Because this Jets roster has some holes, and I feel like they could go a lot of different directions.
Yeah, I think if they stay at three, I have a tough time seeing them take an offensive player. I've not soured on Jonah Williams as much as many seem to have. I think you could still make a somewhat reasonable case to take him there. The Jets could certainly use a shot of talent and youth on the offensive line. And he's a young guy who certainly still has some developing to do. I would be surprised if he ended up being the pick. Right after the combine, there were some rumblings that maybe they should take a guy like Metcalf at three. I don't think that's going to happen. I feel like if they do stay at three, it will probably end up being a defensive player, and it will probably end up being a pass rusher. I do think they're going to be trying like crazy to trade back. And I think if they do trade back, you could see a situation where they draft an offensive lineman or maybe look at a receiver. But if they do end up staying at three, I think it's going to be defense yet again. And this team has gone defense in the first round, I think 10 of the past 11 years, outside of the years they drafted Sanchez and Darnold, basically.
Wow.
Okay, so I guess that brings us kind of the moment of truth here. Joe, with the board kind of is what it is. Kyler Murray went number one overall. Nick Bosa went number two. Who are you picking for the New York Jets, and why do you think that's the right fit for them staying at number three?
I would go with Josh Allen with this pick. I know a lot of people like Quinnen Williams at this spot, and I don't want to punish Quinnen Williams, the prospect, for previous interior defensive linemen that the Jets have drafted, but we have just seen this movie so many times with the Jets before. This is a team that drafted Muhammad Wilkerson in 2011 in the first round, then Sheldon Richardson in 2013 in the first round, also drafted Quentin Coples in 2012 in the first round, then Leonard Williams in 2015 in the first round. And we've heard over and over again, doesn't matter if they want stock up on 3-4 interior defensive linemen, defensive mastermind X will find a way to maximize the usage of it. It used to be Rex Ryan, then it was Todd Bowles, now it's Greg Williams. They kept Leonard Williams. They just paid a lot of money to bring Henry Anderson back off a big year. You draft Quinnen Williams. Are you going to be able to get the most out of those three guys in the 3-4 that they're allegedly going to be playing and continue to ignore edge rusher? I think the gap between Quinnen Williams and Josh Allen is not substantial enough to ignore Allen, who could immediately provide good value at three and fill a massive long-standing need on their defense and be a complete player, not just someone who's just going to be strictly a pass rush specialist. I think the ceiling's high enough there, the floor's high enough there, where the Jets should not hesitate to finally address edge rusher, which has just been completely neglected by them overall. They did not add any new players in free agency, despite a pretty stocked up free agent market. And I think Allen, if he is there, which he should be there, is going to be the move for them if they can't trade back.
All right, there we go. The Jets sticking with their defensive line picks, going with Josh Allen. Joe, thank you so much for joining us and picking for New York.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, don't go anywhere. We got the Raiders coming up next in the second half of the podcast. Stick around. All right, guys, welcome back. Second half of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast here. The Jets going Josh Allen. That's what we just heard in the first half of the podcast. Ben, were you surprised by that at all? Surprised by the Josh Allen pick?
It makes sense. Like, if I look at the Jets roster, the number one need I'm looking at is edge. I'm not high enough on Allen that I would take him over some of the offensive tackles or Quinnen in this class, but I definitely get addressing the need. I mean, as Joe really nicely sussed out, the Jets have not addressed the edge position for inexcusably too long, so it makes sense.
This is very true. But, so, we are on to number four. Josh Allen, now a member of the New York Jets, and the reality of it created. And to pick for the Oakland Raiders, which honestly feel like they control this entire draft, not just because they're at this linchpin point of the draft in number four overall, but that they have two more first-round picks later in the draft. So, to give us the expertise that we needed on what Oakland might do and what Oakland should do, we have on with us now Ted Wynn. He writes for The Athletic full-time now. Ted, thank you so much for joining us, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so I just got to ask you right off the bat, going into this season, you know, you got John Gruden as head coach for the Raiders. They end up trading away Khalil Mack. They don't have Amari Cooper now. They've got multiple first-round picks. What, you probably have a better pulse on certainly how Raiders fans were taking this as the year went on. I mean, Were people ready to just jump ship right at the beginning? These are some drastic moves that happened. I mean, what was it like kind of knowing what Raiders fans were doing back then?
Well, I mean, when John Gruden first came in, fans were excited. We thought we had a team that just needed a better coaching. That, you know, in 2016, they played well. 2017, they changed offense coordinators and things tanked. So Raider fans thought that, you know, John Gruden coming back with all the research he's done would infuse this offense and make it really good and just go back in 2016. But I think the first sign that it was going to happen was when they traded away Khalil Mack. It was a big surprise, and there was mixed reaction. Some people thought it was a smart move financially, but most people thought it was stupid, and they won an analytics award at the end. I thought they could have got better compensation for it, but after that happened, things tanked, obviously, and it got worse and worse. Amari Cooper got traded, and it was clear that the Raiders were going to be in a rebuild mode rather than a kind of a bandage mode and try to get back to contention. They were going to be in a full rebuild mode. So people accepted that, and so far they had a great offseason. I think last year there wasn't really a great plan in place, and things kind of worked out to where the Raiders are having a pretty good offseason now, but I think Mike Mayock coming in and really stabilizing the situation and making some smart decisions, and they're a lot more rational this season, this offseason than last season. So things are looking up. So the Raiders are really having a strong offseason right now.
Right. So you said Mayock comes in and he kind of stabilizes. I was trying to say stabilizes. That's not a word.
That would have been more fancy if you would have been able to pull off stabilizes.
Right. That's the nautical term, now a technical term, you know, stabilizes. Mayock comes in and stabilizes things. I remember when Mayock was hired, I was shocked. You know, I was flabbergasted that this is what happened. I'm so interested to see how it plays out. I think it's like a mad science experiment. That could go really well, but it could also go Frankenstein real quick. So you think he stabilized things. What, in your connections with the team and your time covering them, and then just looking forward, what do you really expect from Mayock in terms of how traditional the GM is going to be? What does his unique perspective bring? Like, even just looking at this 2019 draft class, is there anything that you can look at and signify as like, yo, because this is Mayock, this is going to be a unique approach?
Well, with Mayock, I mean, there's chatter around the league that when teams call the Raiders to make deals or talk with the Raiders, there's a lot more structure now. They feel like there's some competence in the organization. Whereas I think last year, John Gruden just really did not trust Reggie McKenzie as much as he said publicly that they were going to work together. They really didn't trust each other. There wasn't a great working relationship. There was two different boards during the draft.
Right,
they had a coaches board and a scouting board during the draft. It wasn't like a pre-draft thing. They had that during the draft. So there's just all sorts of disorder. This year, they have two separate boards, but they're going to fuse it together before the draft. And obviously, that's going to be a lot more effective. So they said no to some free agents, and they just didn't want to go that high and with overpaying players. That shows some discipline. With the Antonio Brown trade, I thought that they handled it pretty prudently. They thought they were out of the running because the price was too high, and a few days later they came back and they got great compensation for Antonio Brown. So I think those are all signs that the Raiders organization is in better hands now with Mayock working with Gruden.
Now, I wanted to circle back around to coaching a little bit, because you are a guy who knows, you know, X's and O's and film work and kind of why things happen the way they do on the field more than a lot of other people in football media in general, too. You're one of my go-to guys. And so I definitely wanted to ask you, from a coaching standpoint, really from an X's and O's standpoint, how did you think Gruden did in his first year back coaching in the NFL in nearly 10 years? I mean, did you see some innovative things in there? Did it kind of seem like maybe a year where he was just getting his feet wet again, getting back into coaching? What did you see from him as a coach, I think, moving forward for this team?
Definitely strategically wise, the plays they had. I mean, there were some blunders here and there with play calling, but that's expected for somebody that hasn't called plays in however many years that he was out of the league. But just watching his offense, watching the schemes that he put in, and how modern his scheme was, and how he adapted offense from week to week. There's like certain times where he'll add some plays that worked. You could tell that they did research, because there were some plays that they stole from other teams just from a few weeks ago and added to their offense. So this was constantly evolving, and it was just very nice to see from a strategic standpoint. But the big problem was they just didn't have any protection. I forgot what the exact statistics were, but they were one of the worst teams when it came to giving Derek Carr time. Colton Miller was just a mess. Brandon Parker was a mess. And then when they traded away Mark Cooper, there was just nobody to get separation. So it was more of a personnel thing. And hopefully with some more experience for some of the younger guys that played last year, and some of the talent they added this offseason, that those things get worked out, and then you could really see Gruden's scheme kind of stand out.
Now, you mentioned a lot of free agent acquisitions, some of the talent that they added this past offseason. As we start turning our eyes now to pick four, which, I mean, three first-round picks, they could go 12 different directions. I don't want to know who it is just yet with who you have on the board. But, you know, I've seen quarterbacks. I've seen running backs. I've seen, every position on the defense imaginable. Are there any positions or are there any names that you feel comfortable just eliminating, saying, listen, the Raiders, there's no chance that they're going to be going this direction at four?
I really can't say that just because this team has been pretty good at sending out mixed signals, and Gruden literally has lied so much during his time back in the NFL that it's really hard to get a beat on what he wants and what he's what he's saying and what he wants. So I really, really can't eliminate too many players just because the Raiders have been such a wild card.
Well, it's got to make it fun for fun for us, I guess. Maybe not so fun for people who are trying to cover it and get a beat on it. Before I get your pick on this, Ted, one thing that I did want to ask you was about Derek Carr, because kind of going into the offseason, even throughout the season when 2018 was going on, people were like, okay, Carr's not the guy. He can't be the guy. They got to be thinking about possibly moving on, but he obviously has the contract that he has. You know, then they get Mayock in there as GM, and he says he basically fully backs Derek Carr as a potential franchise quarterback at the Combine. I believe Gruden had kind of similar sentiment, maybe not as strong, but what is the outlook on Derek Carr going into 2019? I know you just kind of mentioned there that you're not really going to rule a position out for them to pick, but it kind of seems like they're not really going the quarterback way. It kind of seems like they have faith in Derek Carr. Should they have that faith in Derek Carr?
I think that they do have faith in Derek Carr, but at the same time, this is the make it or break a year for Derek Carr. He had 1 year under Gruden's offense. They should have better protection this year. He has more weapons this year. So it's a really make it or break a year for Carr. He really made some big improvements. Maybe it didn't show up in the stats. He made some big improvements throughout the season as he was getting more comfortable in Gruden's offense. This was the most under siege he's ever been. And he made some improvements under pressure as the season went along, which was surprising. I saw it on the film, and PFF proved it with their grades that he just slowly improved under pressure as the season went along. So those are all positive signs that he can be the guy. I believe that Gruden's really, in fact, this is just my inkling from what I've seen. I think Gruden's really infatuated with Kyler Murray, and I think if he somehow fell down to number four, he would draft him, and that's not even really a knock on Derek Carr. I just think that he likes Murray that much. And just based on Mayock's past quarterback preferences, I think he probably likes Dwayne Haskins more than Murray, but I don't think the Raiders will draft Haskins at four. I think if somehow Haskins fell down later in the first, they'll draft him, and I think that they might keep Carr. If that somehow happens, I think they'll keep Haskins and Carr and kind of have a Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees type of deal going on, but I doubt Haskins falls that far. But there's always that possibility. But I do believe that they like Derek Carr a lot, and like I said, just if somehow it happens that Murray falls down to four, then I think they might pick up Murray.
No, that makes sense. Okay, so We'll just get right to it then. You kind of overviewed the team, overview what they might be weighing. You're picking for them right here. Kyler Murray went one. Nick Bosa went two. Josh Allen went three. Who's going number four to the Oakland Raiders via your pick, Ted?
I think it has to be Quinn Williams. The Raiders have a logjam at defensive tackle. They picked Mo Hurst in the fifth round last year and PJ Hall, and they showed some promise last year. And Haskins played really well, or Hankins played really well. So they have a lot of defensive tackles, and they only have actually one edge rusher on the roster right now, which is Arden Key. So I think if Bosa fell, they would jump to the podium. And obviously there's a lot of edge rushers in this draft, but Quinn Williams is, I think, just in that upper echelon of prospects this year where you just can't say no. He's the best player available. Adding him to the mix and having him start with Mo Hurst is going to give the Raiders a pretty formidable defensive tackle duo for a long time. And yeah, I think that's got to be the pick there.
I know they got a lot of bodies on that interior defensive line, but Quinnen Williams is just so good. So there's
yeah,
no way.
He's just too good.
I know. It's hard to say that that's wrong in any way. Ted, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciated your insight, and thank you for making the pick for the Raiders. Hopefully, Raiders fans like it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Ben, that's it for this episode. Good people, we will be back tomorrow, starting off with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's a lot of different directions that the Buccaneers could possibly go. I'm obviously going to have a lot of knowledge within that situation, so I'm really excited for our guests to join us, make the pick, and keep going with this guest mock. So until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.